is a new or this is a new weekend. Oh, it says connected. We don't do that anymore.
There's no password for our guests anymore. Trying to tell everybody how far back. I don't know how far back. Well, was, when they were doing the Pokemon,
yeah, I was surprised.
We were talking about whether to allow because
it's
people were connecting
for it to go.
I think the entire board may be less conservative on these matters. I was shocked, actually.
Yeah. Well, I think we were all. It's actually what there were other cities who are more concerned on the cost of the environment. You know, where the split is definitely looking at. So it'll be an interesting conversation.
Are people dialed in?
They should be. It's just on you.
Okay.
Yeah, who do we have? Well, Adam, obviously. Colin?
Colin and Jeff.
Jeff and Colin. Oh, is that right?
We've had all Mother Nature issues. Snow, wind, rain.
Oh my God, yeah.
Our consultants are all stuck.
There was going to be a horrible storm in Big Bear on Saturday.
Yes.
Nice.
And then it rained, right?
Did you?
I had to work a long time on Sunday to make up for it, but that's okay.
Okay.
No, it rained more.
Oh.
Did you
like me to do that?
Brought your hand.
It doesn't matter to me.
I don't mind.
Gender ones can't convince the wife.
See, 114, the two small ones.
Mask for everyone.
And one big one.
This is the agenda online.
Yeah.
Said, yeah.
It is. I have it on my emails.
She has a change.
Yeah, I got it from my emails.
Yeah, but that's on 114. Yeah, that's 114.
Yeah.
The last one is 419.
4.
Good.
That's
a typo. Oh, thanks. I've not gotten too much trouble
maybe.
So far this year.
Yes, it's just a typo on the landing page.
Well, it was the second month. I'm ahead of last year.
But it's correct on when I had
so the...
I had the email, but I... Yeah.
The HTTP address is wrong?
No, when you go to, like, CVAC agendas, you want to do the community choice, and then I think it said 1-4.
It says 1-4, but it's not 4.
Yes. I was like, it all starts again.
Okay. Pulls up the right agenda. It's just like,
this is embarrassing. Heads will roll.
Pretty much.
Just one.
You could give it to me.
One of the
Thank you, Captain.
One else. Do tell.
So this would be under item 6C.
There's a reason why none of my memos go out without some other hands on them.
Every editor needs it.
Yeah. This is energy efficiency program.
That's true.
Even the expert. I'm not an expert. You will always find mistakes in my workshop.
Yeah. Some developers are trying to sync their project and make it work on the other side. So thank you for your time.
We have a couple staff members who are
2:30.
Hey, beat your heart out.
I'm jealous.
You would be.
Yeah. How did we get that?
I don't know. They ordered it at one of those. I know. This is more Palm Springs style, isn't it? Huh?
Nice. Like,
yeah.
The light show.
The light show.
Our
Palm Desert swag.
Of course.
Our pens are orange.
Yeah.
We're going white and mass. See, that's already called dibs on the orange.
Orange is long before.
As much as I'm enjoying the social aspect of this get together.
Maybe we.
Do you guys have a council meeting today?
No.
Okay. I thought I heard something about that. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
we could have one right now.
There you go. So I've been asked to call this meeting to order. So here we go. Can we have the roll call, please?
Cathedral City.
Here.
Palm Desert.
Here.
Palm Springs.
Here.
And there are so many people here. Do you mind if I take a quick second? Just name and position as we go around the table and then the outside. There's so many people here.
Ryan Sindel, City of Palm Desert. Staff member.
Erica Felci, Governmental Projects Manager for CVAC.
Katie Barras, Director of Environmental Resources, CVAC.
Tom Kirk, DCE staff.
Yes.
Yes.
Charlie McClendon, Cathedral City Manager.
Libby Carlson, CVAC. Sharon Lee, Kaplan,
Cathedral City.
Kim Floyd, resident of Palm Desert and Sierra Club spokesperson locally.
Raymond Gregory, Deputy City Council Member.
Ernesto Gutierrez, Cathedral City Council Member.
Joe Hummel, I'm Palm Desert Resident.
Rosario Avila, Cathedral City Resident.
Welcome, one and all. Thank you for taking that moment to introduce ourselves. This is the point in the agenda where we entertain public comments with regard to items not on the agenda. I do have at least one card for an agenda item, which we'll get to in a little bit. But is there anyone who wishes to address us on non-agenda items? Please.
Yeah.
And just if you could again give your name and an address, which is optional for the record.
Rosario Avila, Cathedral City. I'm in Cathedral City. So I've been following this topic for years now, and specifically in Southern California, and I participated in many of the cities when they've talked about community choice aggregation. So for as much as I hear the words local control and the community being involved, I just want to express my frustration, because when you go on the CVAG website, the last meeting you had was in November, and it says that your next meeting is in December. But when you click on the December meeting, it says it's been canceled, and it says it's being moved up to, I think it was January 20-something. That day came, and there was no agenda. So I called CVAG asking, did that meeting occur? There is no agenda. And I couldn't get an answer, so I called my city manager. And then he reached out to me later and told me about the meeting today. So I just want to let you know, your website is for anyone in the general public. If you go on the website right now, it's technically incorrect. So your December meeting leads you to believe there's a January meeting, and there wasn't. And so then all of a sudden, it's just today's meeting. So I just wanted to let you know about that.
Thank you so much. While we can't address non-agenda items due to the Brown Act, I can tell you staff is here, and they have an attentive ear, and we always will endeavor to do a better job. We do want the public involved. Thank you. Another comment on non-agenda items?
Yes.
Yes.
Kim Floyd, Palm Desert, and Sierra Club. The young lady's comments do remind me of comments we've made before about the need for an advisory council from the communities eventually as the operations get into place. What I wanted to bring up otherwise was the question about what level of knowledge and information the board members have as it relates to what's going on a statewide basis with CCA and the CPUC and the changes that they have made that have impacted our local CCA, and whether it's appropriate for individual CCA board members locally to take positions and lobby the decision makers in Sacramento on these issues. Or are we dependent upon the Cal CCA lobbying arm? And I think the potential risk with that is we don't necessarily understand or know the decisions that they're making and how the Cal CCA, how they may impact us locally. And just a question about how much energy we have to put into knowing and deciding on our own about CPUC activities. So, thank you.
Thank you. And again, I think we're reluctant to enter into discussion about non-agendized items, but I think you've attended most, if not all, of our meetings, so you know some of the background. And for further details, stay tuned and or discuss your concerns with staff. And I have a feeling that it may appear on future agenda items as well. Thank you. Any other input on non-agenda items? Okay, seeing none, then we'll go ahead and move to board member director comments, if any.
Okay.
I'll wait.
Thank you. You're going to reserve your right?
I will. Yeah. I'll wait for
that's fair enough. We do have a consent calendar before us, and that's with regards to item A, which is approval of the November 19, 2018 minutes, and then B, the consulting services agreement with Don Dame. And we'll entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar.
So, I move on just the minutes, since there are only two of us who are at the meeting. Mm-hmm. First,
yes.
When we split those. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion.
I'm thinking I should abstain.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any objections? And one abstention. Thank you. The second item I actually wanted to pull anyway, just for brief discussion. I had asked staff to provide us just with a financial update so that before we enter into any financial obligations, we at least see where we stand so that we enter into those obligations knowingly. Did you want to do that now, or did you want to postpone this item to later in the agenda? I'm not looking for an extensive discussion of the financials, but just basically confirmation, the money's still in the bank and we have enough to enter into this obligation, if that makes sense.
You have that confirmation. And we did give a report at your last meeting, and your acting chairman and I had a brief conversation, at least text or email or something today.
Email conversation.
What we will do for each and every regularly scheduled DCE meeting is have a financial report. There hasn't been much activity since the last meeting, but you should know that in writing. And so we could go into some more detail if you like, but as you probably know, we certainly have over $4 million in the bank and not a whole lot in the way of expenses over the last couple months. And some of our expenses really date back to the end of the last fiscal year, and we haven't reimbursed them because some of those sit at CBAG. So I'd be happy to provide detail, but certainly the agreement with Don Dame in some ways is not an additional expense to the board. It's an expense that's just shifted contractually from CVAG to DCE.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And really, for all our benefit, the conversation I had with Tom was that, we're the stewards. We're the ones with the fiduciary responsibility over several million dollars. And even if there's $100 spent, we should at least be aware of that. Not that we need to spend the preponderance of every meeting going over financial. It's certainly not at this point. So Tom has agreed to that in future meetings. We'll just have a summary. So what I'm hearing is that nothing significantly has changed from the detailed financial report you gave at the last one, meaning we still have funds far in excess of any foreseeable obligations and certainly adequate to enter into this obligation.
Absolutely. And your next meeting is just in a few weeks, and we'll have a financial report on that agenda.
Okay.
Great. I'll move this item. Sure. Just 5B.
So there's a motion. I'll go ahead and second. Any further discussion? All in favor, then, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passed unanimously. Okay. That brings us to six on the agenda, and that is A, the election of the DCE board chair and vice chair. I nominate Shelley Kaplan for both of those positions.
We can all go home and you say chair of everything.
Don's laughing.
Don's laughing on the speaker.
Yeah. Shelley, you didn't think you were going to be here and get away with it, right?
Exactly.
No, I'm just kidding. So we'll entertain a motion for chair and vice chair.
Acting chair is happy to continue. I'll nominate chair.
If you'll continue as vice chair with that background,
sure,
if that's okay.
Absolutely. Okay.
You have a nomination for a chair and a vice chair, and you could close unless there's another nomination.
Seeing none.
Okay.
Seeing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is passed unanimously. Don't expect anything close to what we got from our last chair. That's all I can say.
Even two of us.
That's my acceptance speech.
Going to the CPC.
Thank you all. Okay, and I think maybe the main reason we're here is the results of the survey. So, Katie, with that, we'll turn it over to you.
Actually, I'm going to turn that over.
Well, there'll be really two pieces of this, and Katie and Eric, I'm sure, will weigh in. You have the staff report before you, and we gave you a little background on the process for selecting Mr. Probolsky and his firm. He is on the phone with us. There's some background. I presume.
He's logging in now.
So. Adam, are you on the phone?
He will be any second.
Well, we...
Sorry.
Is it any second or in a few minutes? Because we could shift the agenda.
We can come back to it.
Why don't you do that?
Just all right, let's do that. Let's, if you don't, wouldn't mind, Mr. Chairman, let's move on to energy efficiency program.
Okay. Let's do that. We'll come back to B. Katie, you're up again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an item we wanted to bring to the board's attention. We have talked very generally in the past about an opportunity that a community choice program has, which is to submit a plan to the California Public Utilities Commission for an energy efficiency program. This is something that we have looked at as a possible opportunity and really wanted to bring it to you today. Our intent would be to bring back more details at the next meeting in February. Essentially, through the CCA program, the legislation was amended to allow community choice programs to submit this kind of plan. The funding comes from the public goods charge that is collected from ratepayers. That's the same money, or the same source of funding, that goes to Edison for their energy efficiency programs. Our energy partnership that we have with the cities is also funded by that, but there are separate pots. And this particular source of funding for community choice is a separate pot that's only available for that source and wouldn't interfere with the others. So we've been talking about HERA's staff, and we had a good conversation a week or so ago with the CPUC staff person just to kind of find out the details. It is a process that would take as much as a year or more to put together a plan and submit that plan. The idea is that we could have some energy efficiency programs that would be focused on and tailored to our local communities. As an example, the City of Lancaster, through their Community Choice Program, has done this. They're one of two in the state. They're currently offering a residential, kind of an audit advisory program to residents, which helps them to identify energy efficiency measures. And they're also doing a small, what's called a direct install for small business, where they go into small businesses and actually install better lighting and different kinds of features. So it's an example of, there's a lot of different options, but I think really at this point we wanted to just bring it to your attention as an option, and we'd like to bring back some more information about that. In order to implement the program, it'd be most reasonable probably for us to have a consultant help us put that plan together. As I say, it's a process that could take some time, but we might be able to time it in such a way that maybe during the same year that we launch or sometime after that we'd be able to offer that kind of program, especially in our climate where some of the needs that we get are different from those that are offered to other parts of Edison territory. So that's pretty much just informational at this stage. And like I say, we anticipate if the board is interested, we could bring back some estimates of what the initial cost might be and kind of opportunities there.
Questions for staff?
Will there be, would there be a way to, when we have that come back to us, to try to quantify what the conservation savings might be relative to an investment? $1 million for a three-year program is a pretty hefty amount. So.
The $1 million that you're looking at is the funds that, I think that's the funds that Lancaster is receiving for their, I think that's right, let me see.
Just to clarify, in terms of the million, it's right. Coming from the PUC to Lancaster, or in this case, to DCE. It's not funds.
Funds that would come out of the $4 million.
No.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
No, this is money coming in that you would then have the authority, other than a PUC or Edison determining how that money is spent in your communities, okay. It would come here and you would make those investment decisions.
Okay, good to know.
But I think what we would want to do is quantify the cost to DCE of putting together the plan.
Thank you.
So. Yeah, and I would definitely bring something back, and mm-hmm. I definitely would like to see sort of, as you discuss, sort of focus on residents, but also focus on businesses.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of small businesses, especially in the summer, as we mm-hmm. talk about the climate, have such a hard time and don't have the necessary ability to do solar because of their landlord. And so we want to combine sort of our environmental conservation focus, but also a way to keep their costs down, right? Because that benefits us long term on both issues.
Okay.
If I might, for a question to our own staff here, does the plan going to the PUC identify the programs, or is it in advance?
Yes. The plan identifies programs, and we need to show the cost of those programs and that they're cost effective, and then the CPUC evaluates the cost, and that's, I mean, there's actually a formula that determines how much we'd be eligible for, but we do need to provide.
And this, of course, circles back to the comments Kim's made, and in fact, all of you made about involvement of the community. And trust us, if we brought forward a game plan on this, it's not let's hire a consultant, let them prepare a plan, and off it goes. It'll come back here and probably involve us in community engagement as well as to what are those proposed programs. And as a lead-in to our next agenda item, you know we haven't pursued a lot of this because we've been in something of a holding pattern based on the direction you might, in fact, provide today or very soon. So thanks, Katie.
The funds that you're talking about do not replace other funds that we would otherwise get, right? This is above and in addition to. Okay.
Yeah, that was one of the questions that we wanted to make sure
exactly.
was the case.
And is the process more like a grant application, or if we have a valid program, it's going to be accepted? In other words, and you might get into the weeds more on this next meeting, but I want to understand if we make a decision to invest money in a consultant, is mm-hmm. that basically a guaranteed return, or is it
yeah.
just like a grant application process?
I don't know the answer to that for
okay.
sure. My impression is, yeah,
it.
I think the you know if you propose a reasonable program, it should be approved. But we'll get an answer to that question.
And I don't mean to imply that I would oppose it if there wasn't a
guarantee. No, it's important.
We just need to know that.
Make sure that if we're going to make an expenditure, it's not really a grant. I don't think in the same
no.
way that it's competitive.
I guess I'm asking if it's an application or if it's just a prop. Is it kind of a process and with a known outcome versus just an application, and the answer can be yes or
yeah,
no.
We'll
okay.
We'll look into that further.
Cool. Thank you.
A better answer.
So this is just informational at this point. And
with your consensus, we'll bring this back forward. Bring this back for your consideration and potential action. For example, hiring a consultant, prepare an application or
yeah.
report in that process.
And do you need formal action to move forward with that, or just
we don't? But you could certainly provide it.
I'm hearing consensus.
Yeah.
Would there be any objections?
No, sure.
Okay. There's your consensus then. Are we ready to go back to B?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Let's go ahead and do that.
So, the just a bat by bat way of background, particularly for those that may not have been at the last meeting, and perhaps not all that engaged in this for the last year. As we all know, we were to flip the switch in, what was it, August?
Mm-hmm.
Flip the switch, and you were going to purchase and sell electricity for the three cities, the Cathedral City, Palm Springs, and Palm Desert. The energy market changed substantially, and you made a quick modification in the approach, which meant don't flip the switch at this stage. We liquidated our assets, and this board has been very clear from day one that its highest priority was reducing the rate and therefore your customers' bills. And when it became clear, thanks to the energy market as well as actions subsequent to that decision with the PUC, it would be very difficult to beat Edison under the current rules. This board said, what do our customers think about different priorities, particularly providing perhaps a 100% green or carbon-free product, and what do the customers think about a number of various options and issues related with desert community energy and community choice aggregation? Katie and Erica led a procurement, which resulted in the hiring of Probosky Research. And Adam, I believe, is now on the line with us, and I think endeavored, in fact, to even get down here
via person, yes.
the Cessna. But Adam, are you on the phone with us?
I am, guys, and I apologize. I have the time wrong, so I'm in an airport, and so I'm trying to find a spot where it's less noisy for you to hear background noise. But we can get started, and I'll try to find a quieter spot. So, do you want to just get right into the research?
Yeah, we could. We could, I think, hear you reasonably well. Can everybody hear here? And if you can't, come up to the table if you like. Rosario, can you hear okay? Welcome to come up here, too. Adam, it's all yours.
Okay, great. So we came up with a strategy to do a, let's call it a DCE-wide poll that would give you very clear big picture data, but also to give you very clear city-by-city data. And so our broad-based poll of 300 district-wide was included, you know, folks that represented all three cities, and you have people who responded online and on telephone, and of course on mobile phones as well. So it's basically we met people where they were supposed to, where they wanted to be. We responded to the survey. Additionally, they were able to respond in Spanish, and broadly about 3% chose to respond in Spanish. I think the important thing to remember there is pretty much everyone in the Valley speaks English, but you've got some people who are more comfortable speaking Spanish. And so that's kind of how you want to look at that. So from a marketing perspective, an outreach perspective, they're going to be more comfortable in that role. So we'll kind of go through these numbers with the most recent presentation we provided. They'll have the broad-based numbers, and then we drill down into the cities. And we will have city-specific, everything will be in a kind of a much bigger report that will, you know, be hundreds of pages that if someone wants to dive into, you're welcome to, including some of the open-ended questions, which will have the actual words people use and kind of give you a better sense of how they talk about the subject matter. But going right into slide number three, we show you the top issues that people have told us, and we open up every survey with a what's the top issue facing your community. Our goal there is to get people to start talking to us and participating and feeling like they have some ownership in the research, and also to give you some sense of what's really top of mind. Here we have public safety as number one, which is different than a lot of other Southern California communities. It encompasses a lot of different things. Same thing for poverty. Poverty includes affordable housing and all kinds of other things that, like I said, you can read through. The key here is there's nothing that stands out in this, like, you know, 50, 60, 70% number that really, you know, suggests that there's some major, major problem that everybody's concerned about. It's just kind of more of a broader, broader concerns that individuals might mention. So, honestly, you know, we talked about it before, environmental issues are a pretty small number on this issue, and that is because people think differently. When we didn't give them a classification, we didn't say specifically your city or the Valley or Southern California or California, we said your community, and they can kind of think of that however they want to. I wouldn't say that having environmental issues down at 3.3% somehow suggests that people don't care about environmental issues. I think it just simply means that they don't put that first when they're thinking about their community. Awareness, looking to slide five of the CCA, is at about 10%. We're going to round up throughout the presentation.
Adam,
so, yes.
Do you want questions when you're on a slide, or do you want us to hold them till you're done?
At any point, I'm comfortable addressing whatever you have, or we can address it after that.
Maybe if we have brief questions, we can do them during the slide, and any kind of bigger topics we can hold. So this is Savvy Jonathan,
sure.
Palm Desert. I have a very quick question. The slide before the one that you just showed had like a pictorial and said public safety and homelessness stand out as the top issue. Homelessness is a big issue here in the Valley, but later on in your report, I don't see homelessness addressed specifically. I see poverty, I see affordable housing, but did you actually determine that specifically homelessness is one of the top issues?
Poverty encompasses that, and so it's a part of the conversation. I would say, I mean, keep in mind that it's 15% of the people kind of bring up, well, add in the affordable housing folk. I mean, you're talking about less than 20% of the population has some concern over housing of people who can't afford it or homelessness. So it's definitely an issue. It's definitely something that needs to be addressed. And you can keep in mind that we also categorize the open-ended comments that people make. And So you may have some slightly different interpretation over what someone says than we might. So we encourage you when you get to the final of the report and results to kind of read through that and say, okay, this person talked about, my kids not being able to afford to live near me, and versus someone else talking about the fact that there's, homeless people, outside of the store that I go to every day. And obviously those are very different responses and very different levels of concern.
Thank you.
Councilman, just for clarification, if you're following along with what was linked in the agenda packet, it is slightly different for time's sake than what he's presenting. He also wanted to present some city-by-city data. So when he references slides, the numbers may not match up exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
So question, and we'll get that your data. Okay.
Can I ask? Yeah, so...
Adam, one second.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Adam, this is John Aguilar from City of Cathedral City. Brand new and incredibly naive about much of this. So can I ask a more basic question about the survey methodology and a 101 of, particularly I'm thinking in our city, were respondents canvassed from the northern part of the city versus the southern part of the city? Is there a way to quantify that? This is probably taken from the voters' roll. Is there a way to identify neighborhoods where these surveys were taken or alike?
So the answer is, so our charge was to talk to resident ratepayers, not necessarily voters, which in depending on the city, can match up to the tune of 70 to 80 or even 90%. So I would say that they can match up. The answer is all of our research is proportional. So we make sure that we have the right number of men and women and gender and party and all those different things. I mean, not party because that's many voters, but basically have it all appropriately proportioned, similar to geography. So the geography is also going to be appropriate. We did not break down by geography in the individual city reports, but we can absolutely do that. So if that's an important thing on the back end, you can tell us you want it done by, whatever geographic delineator you want, we can do that.
Great. I'll probably do that. Thank you.
I didn't set the stage entirely properly, and if I might, what we planned on doing with Adam in person or over the phone, we've certainly narrowed down his presentation, but we do plan on spending maybe even another 30 or 45 minutes with Adam, have you have a chance to spend as much time as possible, and if we needed to bring him back over the phone or otherwise, we could certainly do so at the end of February, because I don't want to understate the importance of this survey to the decisions you have to make very soon, new and veteran members of the DCE board. Really $100 million a year type decisions loom ahead for you. And to set that context, Adam will spend as much time as you need to, unless he's headed toward an airplane soon. And then Don Dame is going to ask you, all right, here are some options. What do you think in the context of the survey results? So that's how we've structured this. Adam, I think you're good to go. Sorry about that. And do you have a plane you're going to catch sometime soon?
No. I'm staked out in the. I'm fine. I'm great.
Right,
no place to be.
All right. Thank you.
And just to reinforce that, I'm generally available to be there, and so I apologize weather didn't allow it, but generally I'm available to be there, and we love the opportunity to develop more robust and more relevant reporting that might be helpful, like categorizing results by geography or some other delineator. So we're totally available for that. There's no extra charge, and we can do it pretty quickly. So as we go through this, and you start thinking, oh, I wish I knew, as long as it's within the parameters of the data we have, we can get that to you. I'm at slide 5, looking at familiarity with CCA. You have 10% familiarity, and that I can imagine that could possibly be frustrating. frustrating for some who don't necessarily, who think maybe you've done an outsized amount of marketing or outreach and wish it was higher. But I would say that from a government program, picking a government program that isn't actually implemented or rolled out, that's pretty darn good. And it also puts you in a position where you don't have a very high level of knowledge of what you're up to, so you don't have to overcome some idea of who you are and what you're about. You can start to tell that story yourself. I think that might be the rosiest way of looking at it, but I think it's exactly the right way to look at it. Slide six, we start to explain what exactly the DCE is and give some pretty fact-based details about it. And slide seven tells us whether people support or oppose the program. And this is really the first chance they have, most people have, to have someone explain to them in that encapsulated way, kind of in a vacuum, what it is, and to tell you how to feel about it. 79%, again, we round up, say they support the CCA program. So, I mean, that's like a pretty impressive starting point based upon the facts. Now, you know, you're educating them on what the facts are, and I don't think we're at all disingenuous, but that's the basis for their knowledge at this point. And there's only 9% opposition. And when I say only 9%, we never want to discount the minority and don't want to discount how vocal they could potentially be, although I don't think you've had much of that, but that's always a possibility. So we always want to understand that. And then the unsure, we want to look and see who those people are. And so we have the demographics of all those different groups, and then we can go through and help you guide, you know, your conversation, talking to the types of people who are detractors and are unhappy with the program and don't want to see it be successful, and identify those people who are most unsure and give you a sense of what their angst is about, and perhaps give you the opportunity to answer that. And that's kind of, I think we believe, a big part of what's the value of the research. Certainly the big numbers are great, but the details of how you can do some messaging and do some outreach can really be very useful. So slide 8 breaks down the support level by individual city. And as you can see, so overall we have 79% support. Cathedral City matches up. Basically, it's exactly the same. 81%, a little bit higher in Palm Springs, and just a tad bit lower at 74% amongst Palm Desert. So, really, we don't see a lot of, we would call out something significant here if we saw a lot of difference. There really isn't a lot of difference. There's, you know, mid to high 70, early 80 support throughout the three cities. And then on slide 9, and just to classify, we kind of constructed this perfect little product, we think, that broadly gave us perspective on the DCE-wide and then gave you specific information for each of the cities. So we had just 5 questions that were asked in each of the cities, which were very statistically valid because we did 300 district-wide or DCE-wide and then 300 in each of the cities on these several questions. So each of the scenarios, each of the questions we have city-specific data for on the 300, we'll break those down. Otherwise, generally, they're about the same size, and so we have about 100 per city in the overall base sample. So I think someone that I heard earlier kind of explained that the numbers might differ a little bit by city. That's what we're kind of showing here. But even the broad numbers are basically going to marry up pretty similarly. On question 9, we asked them, basically saying, look, DC will allow customers to opt out to stay with Edison. You know, why do you oppose the CCA education program? So, the CCA education program. So, this was just for those who opposed on the broader survey. But we want to understand why it is that they weren't going through. They wanted to, you know, they didn't support the program in general, even with the possibility of opting out. And the number one answer there is bills already too high, some kind of cost increase. So they have this foundational, fundamental belief that their bill's going to go up, and they don't want you to mess with it. And then what's really nice is there's a group of people, the number two group of people is they need more information. And there's also a group of people who say they're dissatisfied with what they have. And And then there's, concern over some sort of risk, not worth the benefit, again, not necessarily knowing how the program is going to work. And other things like you already have solar and things like that. We look at this list and we call it basically homework. So this is your chance to kind of look at these things and say, oh, and in our, Q&A on our website and in any of our outreach work, these are the things that we're going to want to talk through and be able to have an answer for. You already have solar? Well, that's okay. I'm sorry?
No, you can go on.
Okay. So, somebody says, I already have solar. Well, that's fine, but you can still save or your neighbors are still going to save, or we're still going to have carbon neutral power in the desert, different things that can potentially motivate them to be more supportive. But this is a good place to start. But again, it's a very small group of people. Only 9% said they opposed, but still wanted to investigate them. So, slide 11. Willingness to support. We kind of get into more detail here. We offer the opportunity to talk about offering the opportunity for ratepayers in their cities to reduce their carbon footprint and fewer greenhouse gases, closer to achieving climate goals. Would this make you, more or less likely to be willing to support the program? And knowing again if you're always opt out. 76% say it makes them more willing to support the program. And again, if we dive into each of the cities on slide 12, you can see how the numbers change a little bit. Most supportive in Cathedral City, least supportive in terms of pure number, but still very high at 69% in Palm Desert. So you see some difference in numbers there, but broadly, in a world where I hate to make everything political, but in a world where elections are won by, 500 votes or 1% or something like that, these are very, very big majorities that are supportive of the program. On slide 13, we kind of go into something and we debated on how to present this data, so if somebody wants to see it in a different way, maybe we can make an infographic, but basically 41.5% say they were willing to pay more to help achieve local climate goals. And among those, you see the dollar amount and the percentage. So we let them tell us, we wanted them to tell us how they wanted to talk about it. And so it turns out that most of the people who responded to us about how they much more they were willing to pay talked to us in terms of dollars, not in terms of percentages. So in terms of dollars, you've got 20% who say they'd be willing to pay $1 to $10. You've got 15% willing to pay $11 to $99. And you've got a remarkable group of people who'd be paying much more than that. And then you can see on the other side the percentages, 1 to 4%. And you can add it up and basically see that there's a core group of people who are, without more prompting, without any more outreach or marketing, are willing to pay more for the idea of achieving climate goals. And it turns out that dollars are a better vernacular. It's what they're more willing to how they see their bill. So that's not saying, the end all, you can't talk about things in terms of percentage increases, but it may be a wiser way to go because that's how they're talking about it. So moving to message testing, the slide 14 explains customers have three choices, right? This idea of 100% carbon free electricity, and then the idea of having, paying a little bit more. The idea of, just the basic service, which costs about the same, or opting out entirely. And we explain, in this case, we call these kind of, we try to identify mover messages. So here, we talk about local control on slide 15, and the idea of reinvesting in a local economy instead of paying shareholders. And, to some degree, that could be seen as a little bit charged in this kind of corporate, anti-corporate environment. But But that's the reality. I mean, that's part of the reason why you're doing this thing is to reinvest in the community and see if you can get some, you know, local bang for your buck. And people are, quite frankly, very excited about that. 60% say they're more likely to support the program knowing that. There's 90 or 29% who say they're less likely. So there is a group of people who are not taking to that message. What we do on the right-hand side is we look at those who were initially unwilling to support the program, and we identify 16% of them who, based on this message of local control and reinvesting locally, come on board. And then we look at those who are unsure, and 24% of them come on board. So it gives you a sense of this message, and can it move those who are, you know, opposed and unsure? And the answer is yes, to some degree, not in grand fashion, but it's a mover. And also, though, this might be unsure, you've got about the similar number of people who are less likely. So overall, it's a good message, not necessarily to bring people on board who weren't on board originally. Looking at slide 16, we talk about putting a priority on carbon-free energy sources, helping the region achieve the greenhouse gas reduction goals. 56% are more likely based on that message. And again, you grab about 13% of those who were originally unwilling. The rest, 82%, were, you know, essentially already gone. And then those unsure, you grab about 21% of them, but you kind of push about 35% of them away. My sense is, and we could potentially marry up some of this data with voter data if we wanted, my sense is that that may be a knee-jerk Fox News watching reaction, and I don't mean to, again, be too political, but there's definitely a visceral reaction against, if you're not necessarily 100% on board with global warming, you may look at this and be frustrated by that message. Is that appropriate? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And then looking at slide 17, purchasing power in the community from local geothermal, solar, and wind sources. This is a message that we wanted to test. I understand that that was something that you, if you put out there, you'd get people being more supportive of. 56% say they're more willing based upon that message. And again, you're grabbing a few of those who are initially unwilling, but mostly they're still striding against it. And then you've got 31% who are unsure that come on board. So all of a sudden it kind of flips. You have more of the unsure coming on board and being supported based upon this message of local civic sources. So looking at these several messages, I would say broadly, they're all winners. They're all net positive. You're going to want to use them, and I assume you've already been using them to some degree, but now you know that they broadly work within the communities, within the community, and then we can also help get a sense of who might be best to target with those messages, and who, who it might fall on flat ears and not be interested in the message, and we can help you with that. Slide 18. We then say this idea of raising, paying 1 to 5% more. And we split the sample here. So we, in the first scenario, split sample A, we asked 1 to 5%. In the split sample B, we asked 6 to 10%. So in this first split sample A, are you willing to pay 1 to 5% more? 63%, rounding up, say they're willing to do it, which is pretty remarkable for the idea of getting carbon-free products, but also, again, reminding them that there's a chance to opt out. So 63% may be more willing. Slide 20 breaks it down by community, and so Cathedral City is right there at 62%, 65% for Palm Springs, and basically 60% for Palm Desert. So not a huge amount of difference in those communities, and a clear chunk of a quarter plus or so of the voters or the residents who are unwilling to. But the lion's share are on board or unsure. So continuing with this question, slide 21, we say, would you choose to opt out of the program? So first we ask them, are you willing to support it based on the prospect of accomplishing the goal of climate change improvement? And then with the option of opting out. And then we ask them, okay, would you opt out of this 1-5% increase in cost? And 46% said, no, I would not opt out. And 32% say that they would. And we've got still a pretty good chunk of 22% say they aren't sure. Can we, we talked about this, can we extrapolate from this hard economic data? My answer is probably not hard economic data. I think this is very, very, should be very helpful in as a guide as to how things might go. Although, I think you have some evidence that opting out would be very limited and in a very limited scope. I think what's important to understand is in the context here, we are talking to people in a vacuum. We've in the span of about 12 minutes, we've asked them what's going on in their community. We've educated them on what DCE is, told them about the program. Now we're getting them to respond. Their whole context for energy has changed in the span of 8 or 12 minutes. So I think that's the context under which we have to look at this. If someone were to, give them that opportunity over that short amount of time, you basically have 32% saying they would choose to opt out. But that's assuming they even know about the program or open their mail, so to speak. Looking at slide 22, we have sample B. And here we talk about increasing costs to the consumer at 6-10%. And again, a place where the pollster is surprised, I would have assumed that you'd have much greater opposition at the idea of raising someone's rates as much as 10%. Here you have 49% say that they're willing to support the program, 45% unwilling, and I mean, I don't think anybody should be shocked at the prospect of that. It's a pretty big chunk of money. And then we look at it by on a city-by-city basis, majority support in Cathedral City and Palm Springs, and plurality support in Palm Desert. The number is just a little bit closer together. And as we look at the base amongst amongst the overall sample, slide 24, would you choose to opt out if there was this 6-10% increase? And you have the plurality of 48% plus, and a third saying no. So I think as you start to plan through this and how you make your choices, just know that there's a greater resistance, no surprise, to the idea of such a significant 6-10% increase in cost.
Adam, if I can, if I can interject, because this conversation will relate very much to the pro forma update that Jeff with TEA will give, and just to remind the board and perhaps those in the audience that haven't been part of this conversation, the question that Adam and his crew asked was about total bill. So 1-5%, would you support paying 1-5% more on your overall bill? Under just about no scenario we've contemplated would we charge even 5% on the total bill. The energy consumption portion for a residential customer might be 40-50% of the bill. So do a double. If it's 5% over the whole bill, it's 10%, 12% on just the energy portion. And so in some ways, this is even more shocking in terms of results, at least for me, as somebody who is very sensitive to my electric bill. So just again, as a reminder how you do those calculations. And when we talk about the pro forma, we'll be talking about just the energy portion and a 10%, for example, price increase. Adam, was that the last slide then?
I'm here, yeah.
Yes.
All right. Mr. Chairman, board members, questions?
I have one. The what we just saw is a little different, as was mentioned, than what we were previously provided. Can we get that rack of slides or PDF? That's a good summary that incorporates both the big picture and the individual cities.
Send both of them.
The other thing that comes to mind is that we may ask for a brief, like, 5-minute overview of this to be presented to our colleagues on council with enough notice. Would that be a possibility?
Yeah, of course. And I know, Adam, you could speak for yourself. Obviously, DC staff could help that, or maybe even facilitate having Adam pipe in via phone or whatever else. It's obviously useful to have.
You can't scare me with a request for me to be in the Coachella Valley. So I'd love the opportunity to be there. Barring any issues with weather or travel, I'm happy to be there anytime. I'd be happy to make those presentations.
Jeff said we're going to schedule you for the first meeting in August.
Well, the joke's on you, because I spent about a month there in the summertime. So I love the hot weather.
I do too. Listen, seriously, for a 5-minute presentation, which is the attention span of our council on non-agendized items, you know, I wouldn't make you come down. But if we want to go in that direction, then either Katie in person, maybe,
sure.
or you by phone. I mean, we can figure that out. But I certainly would want you to go to that trouble for 5 minutes.
No problem.
Other questions or comments? What I'm understanding is this is informational at this point.
It is. And
we're going to get the full report.
I do want to tee up Don Dame for the implications and have some board discussion around that.
Okay.
Don?
Yes, is my audio coming through okay, Tom?
Fantastic.
Okay, well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and other board members. You heard from Adam about the survey that was conducted to help give a little more insight into some of the drivers related in DCE's case, primarily to energy and green energy in your local communities. Well, in summarizing this, remember our original goal of DCE was to drive some measurable savings to members of your community. And at the onset, we were hoping to set something about a 3-5% discount versus the otherwise available Southern California Edison product. We had some gas supply issues coupled with some power supply volatility last July, just weeks before you were scheduled to implement your program, and those combination of events made the delivery of likely savings to your community very unsure and possibly unlikely. So based on that information, the board opted to suspend the program at that time to see options about going ahead and what possibly other views the community might have. So what Adam showed us today, summarizing the results of his survey, was there appears to be very, very strong local support for a locally controlled, environmentally focused power supply program. So the board now needs to wrestle with the older objectives of presenting firm and demonstrable savings versus a locally controlled and focused program that may not deliver the amount of savings that the board originally anticipated to do. So what are the options as you look forth right now? Well, one is you could restart the program just as you did last August with the green product that at that time we were contemplating maybe a 3% savings versus Southern California Edison. But based on power markets conditions we anticipate going forth and subject to confirmation from the TEA folks a little later in this meeting, you would go forth with a green product about 30-35% carbon-free content and rates about equivalent to Southern California Edison. So your constituency would get the local control, the local focus programs administered and handled and implemented by their local elected officials and staffs, but wouldn't get demonstrable savings. Option number two might be, well, let's start with a 100% carbon-free product. basically all the kilowatt hours consumed by participating members of your community would be carbon free. And this would be 25 years ahead of the state of California's goal to be 100% carbon free in electricity production by the year 2045. What would that 100% carbon free product look like? The total cost would be about 8 to 10% above Southern California Edison's standard rates. That's their base product, yet simultaneously 5 to 6% less than Southern California's equivalent 100% green product, which is an opt-up product for the Southern California Edison rate paying base. Option number three would be to continue the DCE Community Choice Program and either dissolve the JPA or redirect the JPA to pursue other energy-related beneficial activities within your community. Like you heard Katie talking earlier today, maybe DCE would be involved in some manner in collecting and deciding what to do with the public benefits monies that are collected through the electric bills in California. So those are, at least in staff's view, the likely three options that you'll want to wrestle with. If we go down to the next slide, what would be the suggested approach if we could kind of divine what might be palatable to both the board and the community? Again, to reiterate, the survey results indicate significant positive local support. If you were to go with a 100% carbon-free product, you do have demonstrable savings versus Southern California Edison's 100% green product. Again, you would accelerate your community's meeting of the 2045 100% carbon-free standards in California. Your low-income and other special rate classes would be protected. They wouldn't experience those special rate classes. Don't get the step-up costs that the non-special classes would get. And keep in mind that even if you had a 100% carbon-free default product, any and all of your customers at their choosing can opt down to a 50% or a 35% DCE product, or they could remain with Edison. So even in that case, the customers that were somehow disaffected with a local power supply alternative could choose not to participate in that alternative. So again, I think the approach with a 100% carbon-free product is it does give you the ability to say we're delivering demonstrable savings versus Edison, and we're really accelerating our community's contribution to greenhouse gas reductions in the state of California and beyond. And with that, if there are no questions, I think I'll shift it back to Tom and or Katie to go describe the next possible next steps and timing.
Let's see if there are questions, if we can pause from the members. Any questions at this point?
I will have questions, but I want to hear the rest of the staff.
Okay. Do you have a question on this? Yeah.
Don, in terms of the 8 to 10% increase in cost, is that based on a tiered rate or a time of use rate?
No, those are average, so it's actually kind of a homogenization of all of them. And you're correct to point out that some of those percent changes for any particular customer may be affected by that particular customer's usage pattern across time periods. But on average, that's what these numbers are based on.
Thanks.
And just a quick question, Don, on a couple things that you presented, and then we'll keep going. When you showed the options in that one slide, a couple of the options were different default options. But would customers still have other choices beyond the default versus just opting out, would we still offer two different choices, for example, one being the default and another one being an alternative?
My impression would be absolutely, but that would be a board decision on how you would like to set up the tiers in your program. I would anticipate that you'd set up tiers very similar to the way the California Power Alliance and most of the other CCAs have opted to set up their program. They've kind of done the inverse of what we're tending to suggest today, where the default product is the 32 or 35%, the least carbon-free product, but still a significant percentage carbon-free. And then they typically offer a 50% greenhouse gas-free product, and then what they call their Royal Green or whatever their marketing materials allude to it as, is that's the real premium product where all the kilowatt hours that you consume are from carbon-free sources. So the board would actually get to set which of those three alternatives, if those are the three you would so choose to provide, which of those three alternatives are your customers going to get if they do nothing? Most customers really do not take the proactive step of checking a box to go to a different level, although they all do, in fact, have the right to do that. So as a board, you're trying to wrestle with, do I go out of the chute with a 35% carbon-free product and allow my potential customers to opt up or opt out? Or do I start with a 100% carbon-free product and allow my potential customers to opt down or opt out? Just by a way of an added point of reference, I live in the city of Ventura. The city of Ventura commenced operation under the California Power Alliance's Community Choice Aggregation Program effective February 1, just four days ago. The city of Ventura opted by unanimous vote of council to utilize the 100% green product as the default product. So for those customers that just look at their mail and look at the two opt-out notices before February 1st and the two subsequent opt-out notices over the next 60 days, for those customers that do nothing, they will receive the 100% product by default. They can opt down later, incidentally. Once if they find out and they feel like this is not for them, they could opt out later. But most of the studies that you see say that what you offer as default will be the predominant choice among the members of your community. So you have you by your board action can start with a very, very high greenhouse gas-free product or start with the base greenhouse gas-free product. But in any event, any and all of your customers will have the choice to choose whatever products you opt to put on the shelf or to remain with Edison.
All right, Don, I know we need to move forward and we have a packed agenda, but I do have one other quick question. I would ask you for a quick answer. So we saw data from the survey that indicated less than the 90-plus percent support we anticipated previously, plus some that are in low-income categories would not be participating or would not have to pay the higher rates. My question to you is, at some point, will we be able to determine the feasibility of moving forward with either of these options, given that the participation is likely to be less than the very high level that we discussed before?
And if I, Don, if I might chime in here, and Adam alluded to it, the survey results shouldn't be directly correlated to our opt-out rate that we assume. And if you remember, when we went into this, and you'll see it again when we go over the performance, and by the way, this is our substantial agenda item. We don't have a whole lot more after this, and it's critically important. We assumed a 10% opt-out. We had actually gotten through halfway through the opt-out period, and maybe the most important part, and it was well less than 1%.
Yeah.
May have been the lowest opt-out rate in the state ever. Now, if the program...
It was a very different proposal, though.
It was a very different proposal.
You're dangling that. You could save a little money, Carrie.
Indeed. People. But when one asks if this happens and you could opt down or out, will you? You might say yes. I don't remember the last time I actually opened my messages from CVAG, DCE, or Edison. Now, I know there are those that open all their mail, but the actual opt-out will be very different than the assumed opt-out based on survey results. And again, Adam was alluding to that. And will it be a higher opt-out percentage if one went with a option 2 or option 1 program? I suspect yes. Would it throw our entire performa out of kilter? I doubt it.
Okay. So since this is the meet, I've got a 4 o'clock meeting that I need to get to, so I'll ask you one last question at this point and still ask for a brief answer. We're kind of taking a left turn here, right? We're kind of abandoning the possibility or the hope that that DCE can provide lower aids than SCE. Is that a foregone conclusion at this point? I mean, I thought it was kind of a blip in this whole environment where gas prices went up and politically there were attempts to discourage DCs. Are we there now where we're just cannot expect lower rates any longer?
And if I might, now Jeff Fuller is on the line and Don obviously had a perspective. One thing we didn't mention with respect to the history on this is the PUC's decision on the PCIA. And I apologize for using all these acronyms. But the exit fee, the underlying rules of the regulatory game have now changed.
Okay.
And so some of the benefits of these CCA programs have evaporated because of PUC action. Despite the good work of the chairman emeritus. Jeff and Don, do you concur with that?
Yes, I do, and I think I neglected to mention the PCIA. But my quick response to that is, I think based on Adam's results, you will get overwhelming support in your community. I would say well over 50%. Remember last year, although our first and foremost objective was indeed to deliver demonstrable savings, those savings were, in the whole scheme of things, relatively modest, in the range of 2 to 3%. And over Edison's 100% product, you would be delivering savings in the range of 5 to 10%. In my particular case, in the city of Ventura, my estimated rate using an online rate calculator is going to be 7.75% less than Edison's 100% product for my same consumption pattern. And you were always part of your concern for your community when you were establishing this last August was local control, local jobs, meeting local climate objectives and the like. So I would characterize it a slight shift in decision emphasis, but not so much a right or a left turn.
And just in case anybody leaves here thinking Don is suggesting 50% is a high success rate, what he's really referring to are 50% staying with a 100% green default product and perhaps 45% or 40% opting down and a few percent opting out.
That's correct.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
With respect to, and since we are short on time, with respect to next steps, one, you could provide direction to us today. You could also provide, again, some consensus that the proposed options, as Don laid them out, might be a good direction to go, and we could write that up in a more defined way for your next meeting, explain the schedule. And if you remember back to the late fall or early winter, timing is important here. If we are going to start back up in springtime of next year, and you'll see why starting in the spring versus any later will have an effect on your budget yet again, you remember all these conversations, then some decisions need to be made in the next month or two. Is that fair, Katie?
Right. Just very quickly, the main thing that we have is on March 15th, actually, we have to submit a load forecast for the year ahead. and that would be for 2020. So that's really our kind of starting point. But as Tom said, we were anticipating this would be a chance for you to digest the survey and bring this back on the 25th for you to actually make a decision.
I mean, me personally, I sort of support sort of the recommendation here. I think we need something to bring back to our councils. Obviously, I think all the cities, but I don't know, Palm Springs are unanimous in spending more, you know, the last time we came around for the city and supported this unanimously, but I think we need to get these on the agendas, and we're in a tight time crunch with what those numbers we saw on those slides are, so I can get it either on the second meeting in February or no later than the first in March, because we have to make a decision. And so ideally, we'd get them on in February if possible. We need to get that information in a, so we can get them out in a staff report with the data and public comment and have council votes on these, I think.
Yeah, I would agree, and I was following up on Savvy's earlier recommendation about getting an update presented to the councils. I know particularly in our case, since November, well, actually since Shelley was on, we really haven't had an update on the program, what's happened, and since we've decided to defer the program for a while. So if we could consolidate those with this, that would be really useful. I know it's putting a lot of pressure on Charlie because our next two agendas are already incredibly packed, but this is really important, I think, to the extent that we can get it on the agenda.
We can get it somewhere. The biggest thing is the small matter of a council vacancy.
We could do all of that, and if it doesn't happen before February 25th, you, of course, could make a tentative recommendation. We move forward with a load forecast and get buy-in from your colleagues at a subsequent, before subsequent actions take place, and real dollars are being spent by this organization.
I completely concur. I think what you're hearing is that the last our colleagues on council heard about this, and there's new colleagues in some cases, but for those that say, the last they heard was this is, you know, time out.
Right.
And they don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. In our case, we have a meeting on the 14th and then one on the 28th, so there's no way that we're not going to get this on the 14th agenda, obviously, and there's no way, therefore, that we can make a firm commitment on the 25th. I imagine all of our cities have that kind of challenge, so you may want to keep in mind, from a timing standpoint, the need for all of us to bring this to council. And then there's always the possibility, God help us, that they'll say, oh, we'd like to continue the matter and think about it. So, just be prepared for
that. If Katie, and correct, stop me if I'm heading the wrong direction, and Jeff as well, and Don, what we could do is put together a package for your consideration on February 25th that includes a recommendation on how to move forward. And that same package would include this information, historical and otherwise, and survey data that could then, after you've made a decision and digested the details in the survey, which you haven't had really a chance to do so, we could agendize with your city manager's action, confirmation, whatever you'd like in March. That might help with the timeline a little
bit. Work for us.
Is that fair?
Sure. I'll say yes.
They
don't come, so that's easy.
Yeah.
No, we will get this on the agenda when we need to, as long as we have enough time to get the staff report out.
We'll put together a staff report for you, and then you could, obviously modify that for subsequent meetings with the councils. That's our direction. Motion to direct staff along those lines. And,
sure.
All right.
There's a public
comment card. There was on the last item.
I'm going to come back to it because I missed your card on the last item.
Oh, where was it?
I didn't throw one out.
I know, this is for Kim. I got it. All right.
Okay. So, are there any public comments on this agenda item? Yes.
So, this is the survey results, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so my public comment for this topic is that, again, as a member of the public, I did not go to the November meeting, but on the agenda of the November meeting, it says 6C, Desert Community Energy Launch Schedule Considerations, recommendation, no formal board action is requested at this time in preparation for a possible early 2020 CCA program start, however, staff requests board direction on DCE activities as further discussed in the staff report. So when I heard that November meeting, Mr. Jonathan, you were you were saying that in terms of the Brown Act, there on the agenda, there's no formal action. So now here we are. You canceled your December meeting. Your January meeting that you said there was non-existent. And so now today we're in February. And now here we are examining the survey results. So my message to staff and the three board members is, I think you have a serious Brown Act issue, because according to the public, the general public, on your agenda in November, nowhere does it say approve the contract with this consultant. And when you hear that meeting, it's, I believe Mr. Kirk said that Katie Barrows researched that one consultant and called them just for an estimate of how much a survey would cost. Then they included another two people. So I'm really confused. Was that an RFP? It's not on the agenda. So moving forward, if you do use that survey, you have a serious Brown Act problem, because for somebody like me, I wanted to come in and say, well, why did you choose to go to that consultant and not other ones? And the fact that you're on record saying that's the first consultant you called, I think that looks really bad in terms of transparency and who you choose to hire, all in the name of, you know, the three cities who are members of this JPA. So we're kind of already starting on the wrong foot, if I can point out all of these, you know, issues with transparency and the public. So that's my public comment is, you know, it was interesting to hear all the information, but, you know, anyone can just say, well, this is kind of, you know, you sought out who you wanted to do this survey for you, and you're on record saying that's the first person you called. And there was never an adequate RFP proposal process. And so if time is of the essence, you know, why did you cancel your December and January meeting? So that's my public comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
I'd be happy to respond.
If you're sure.
We did see bids from six consultants. And the prevailing consultant in this case wasn't the first person we contacted. We were simply getting an estimate of the general scope, so you got a sense of how much it would cost to do a survey. The criticism or concern that I take most at heart is the change in meeting date. The public did think the meeting was going to occur last week. That didn't occur. We appreciate your patience because we didn't have a lot of the results in. Good news is you aren't taking an action on the survey results or anything else today. You very well might and may indeed want to at the end of in February. That is in the agenda packet and will provide all the background. We'd be happy to provide the background to any member of the public on the procurement process. It's a relatively small amount of money, a fairly informal procurement process, and done very efficiently and with a lot of expertise from my consideration by Mr. Probolowski.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. Appreciate that. Any other public comments on this agenda item?
I just have a quick comment. And that is, if you've not already, I invite you to read either or the fourth National Climate Assessment or California's Climate Assessment conducted in 2018. Principally, one of the main findings there is that within a decade or so, we're going to be looking at a need for a 40 to 50% increase in the state of California budget to deal with impacts of climate change. And so where I grew up down in Texas, we always talked about a dollar waiting on a dime. And in this context, I think that, you know, trying to save the community a couple of cents per kilowatt hour really pales in terms of value to what we really need to work on, and that's getting local control and green energy at, you know, top center.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments on this agenda item? Okay. Is there a discussion by the board members and or a motion to direct staff as was discussed earlier?
Also,
I'm sorry, so what is
the... So I think the motion would be to direct staff to bring back sort of the 100% carbon-free with the opt-down as an option and an opt-out option. So we see what that looks like, so we can...
Okay, so we're not taking any action on the recommendation.
No, it's direct staff to come back with that.
The full staff report. So
the
report
with data, history, recommendation,
one that
we can discuss, maybe make a recommendation, but also take back to our respective councils and staff, and then properly agendize it, hopefully for early to mid-March. So that I assume we can come back and take formal action based on our council.
There'll be a number of other subsequent actions related to expenditure of funds.
So the motion is basically to direct staff to proceed with that report.
Second.
There's a motion and second. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion is passed unanimously. And I need to apologize. I think, Kim, you said you don't need to comment, but I went back and forth, and 6C, you had a card. Did you want to say anything about 6C, which was the energy efficiency
very
program?
Briefly,
and I apologize to you that I missed you while we were actually
The Sierra Club supports the board and staff proceeding with fully understanding the options to take the funds, the community funds that are available, and to manage those funds locally. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience. I think that completes 6. So 7 is informational only. It's the attendance record.
6D is a performa update.
Oh,
I think we can do that.
My bad.
I think we can do that quickly.
Sure.
Jeff.
Tom, I've actually asked Colin to talk through this. He prepared the numbers and I think can move through it most efficiently.
Fantastic. Colin.
Hi, everyone. This is Colin Cameron with CEA. So just a quick verbal overview of the 6 slides we have here. The board has a lot of levers at their disposal in terms of setting policy for this program. So what we're doing here is just outlining the assumptions that we've updated in the model, outlining a new base case scenario, showing the results of that, and then exploring a few sensitivity analyses on those policy decisions. So on slide 47, titled Financial Model Update, the four major areas that we've updated in the model, the SCE generation and PCIA rates, these are significant drivers of your forecasted revenue since DCE's rates will be based off of those. And I should say, you know, we just recently got the refreshed long-term forecast from our rate consultant, MRW, and so I'll highlight some uncertainty in that a little later. We've also updated the power price forecast going into the next 3 years, operating and administrative costs based on conversations with Katie and Don. And finally, we've added in this additional power product that DCE would offer. So there would be a what we'll refer to here as a premium product and a basic cheaper product that customers could opt down to. So on the next slide, titled Base Case Assumptions, this is outlining the sort of defining policy characteristics and customer response to those selections that we've outlined here. So first off, we're assuming a start date in April of 2020. We assume that 10% of customers would opt out of the program, so that means remaining with SCE. And just to reiterate Tom's point earlier, I believe it was Tom, this is a much higher opt-out percentage than has typically been seen by other CCAs and that was indicated in the previous approach to launch. We've assumed an opt-down rate, so of the remaining customers staying with the program, those who are opting to go down from the premium, more renewable product down to the cheaper product, we've assumed 50% of customers would make that selection. And I'll highlight again, that would vastly exceed the amount of customer participation, or I should say, you know, customer activity or active selection that we've seen in the state thus far. But this gives you a nice middle point to benchmark off of. And then finally, we define the two power products as follows. So the basic cheaper product would be 35% renewable, which is just slightly a couple percentage points above the state minimum. And then the implied percentage that would be considered carbon-free under California state law is 25%. And the reason that that's lower is that renewables purchased out of state, to phrase it in the simplest possible way, are not considered carbon-free. So the 75% that would be required to be of the renewables purchase that would need to be made in-state would be counted as carbon-free. So it's 35% renewable, 25% carbon-free, and we're assuming that that would be offered at a 1% rate discount to Edison's generation rate. So that's usually less than half of the total bill. The premium product is assumed to be a 50% renewable and 100% carbon-free product offered at a 10% premium to Edison's generation rate. So, again, that's likely in the ballpark of a 4% increase in overall bill. That would vary by customer and customer class, but just as a rough ballpark. On slide 49, base case pro forma summary. So these are looking at costs, revenues, and net revenue results from this base case scenario we just outlined. You can see there's a jump here from 2020 in terms of costs and revenues up to 2021, and the driver in that difference is really the late start date that we've assumed for 2019. If you look at the second to lowest row, that's cumulative net revenue, so that's the total amount in the bank, assuming that DCE has kept all of its net revenue in reserves at the end of 2020. That number is higher than net revenue because you're carrying some net revenue accrued in 2018 due to the purchase and resale of power just before the what would have been the launch of the program this last summer. You can see 2021 does dip down in terms of the net revenue expected, and that is primarily a function of the forecast for Edison's generation and PCIA rates. I should clarify that those forecasts are very uncertain right now, in part because the new PCIA methodology allows for a true-up mechanism. So each year can be heavily influenced by changes that take place within the year that precedes it. So I guess that, all that to say, further out years should be asterisks with a higher level of uncertainty. So with that as sort of a starting point, a base case to go off of, the next slide, called sensitivity analysis for 2020 net revenue, is outlining how a variety of different policy or customer response changes would impact that net revenue outcome. So this is looking at just 2020 net revenue, and we've got five different variables being explored here, and they're sequenced from most impactful to least impactful, top to bottom. I'll acknowledge that's somewhat skewed by the ranges that we've chosen and the base case pro forma starting point scenario. But if we look at the top, so the opt-down percentage here, we're exploring a range from 60%, so that's, to reiterate, 60% of customers that are staying with DCE choosing to opt down from a premium down to a basic product, and as high as 10% of those opting down, or I should say as few as 10% opting down. In the next row down, you're looking at the rate discount, or I'm sorry, rate premium of that premium product relative to SCE's generation rate, so exploring from 5% to 10%. In the middle row, the basic product rate from a 3% discount to rate parity with Edison. In the second to last row, the RPS content from 40 to 60%, and that's of the premium product. And then last, the opt-out percentage ranging from 10% to 5%.
Can I interrupt you briefly just to highlight. Ask a question? Can I see a question on this slide? This is Savvy Jonathan.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So the sensitivity is broad. It's significant, right? So before we pull the trigger and, you know, make a decision, once we
if we do move forward and if we do articulate our preference for which opt-out options we want to have and so forth, before we actually make a commitment, will we be able to refine the financial projection so that we don't have this broad of a sensitivity range?
Yes, absolutely. We can make updates as the board makes decisions and continue to return with more scenarios. I'll highlight the middle three are board decisions, and the top and bottom scenarios are customer response scenarios.
Yeah, and that's an important... The things that you control could be negative. Well, guess what? You control them.
Yeah.
The things you don't control are generally positive and potentially strongly positive because of the conservative assumptions being made in this pro forma.
And I like that, and I guess I'm asking a question because even looking at the opt-down percentage, it can throw us from positive cash flow to negative in 2020 and even more so in 2021.
That's not my read, but
okay,
correct. The opt-down is mildly negative if the opt-down is as high as 60%. If you remember, our assumption in this performer was a 50% opt-down. If it goes to 60%, we go into the red a little bit.
So this is relative to that earlier assumption.
Yes,
not,
yeah.
Not in total.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
And again, I think most of us would guess that the opt-down would be closer to 10% than it is 50%.
Okay.
So
that's reassuring. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Is that fair, Colin?
That was absolutely accurate, yes.
Excellent.
And it'll be helpful to sort of have that spelled out when we present it.
And
I know this is an early stage, but it's going to happen very quickly.
We apologize.
No, don't take it that way, but just as we prepare this for our councils and the public to really understand what maybe the comparison is, what is the most opt-down other CCAs have seen, and what's the most opt-outs, right? Because we're clearly exceeding any of those, from my knowledge, but I don't know all of them. And I think seeing how conservative we're being, if that is the case, is going to be helpful compared to... We have enough experience from other places to know what is the most opt-down, what is the most opt-out. And if we're exceeding that, and we're still in positive cash situation, that's going to be reassuring to people.
In fact, it may be, if I can tag on that, beneficial at some point to have a slide that says under scenario A, which is like worst case, this is the financial projection, scenario B, which is middle ground, and scenario C, which is kind of full case. Really spell it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And while seeing the other CCAs.
Exactly.
That'll give us real experience.
Exactly. Relative to
what we're doing. Yeah.
Exactly.
And we can do all that.
Just adding more work.
And we will work with your staff on how much of the sensitivity analysis to bring forward to the entire councils. You have the advantage of sitting in a board meeting.
No, absolutely.
And toggling this information will go, and we've done that in the past.
Yeah.
But we understand where you're heading
with
this. Colin, anything else to add on this?
I think that's it, no.
And maybe one takeaway here is... Even with some the rules change substantially, we're projecting even now a slight benefit to the customer on cost for the basic product, which is consistent with the original intent.
That's great. I wasn't expecting that. So
if it's even slighter than before, that's really slight.
Yeah.
Big customer.
Thank you all for attending on the phone.
Yeah.
Anything to add from the group on the phone?
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman.
I did have two more slides, but I'm happy to skip those if that's best in terms of time.
Well, let's go. It's up to you, Mr.
So we are pushed for time. If I can ask you to do that, but to do it quickly. Yeah, 60 seconds or less, if possible.
Okay, so the next slide, just looking at net revenue scenarios, just comparing different opt-down rates with the premium to SCE of that upper product. So ranging from 5% in blue, 7.5% premium in red, and 10% premium in green. And you can see that as the premium increases, the sensitivity to opt-down increases, but you're also working from a very healthy buffer, so to speak, in terms of net revenues. We can explore this further in a subsequent meeting, maybe. the next slide, 2020 net revenue scenarios, this is exploring different program start dates from March 2020 down to June 2020. And you can see that the really significant losses in terms of your potential net revenue would occur if you had not started by May or June, as that's when wholesale prices tend to be lower, and especially in June, those summer rates kick in, and that's when higher net revenues could be accrued. So this indicates an earlier start date might be beneficial to the program. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you. And those were helpful slides. Thank you. Any questions or comments on that agenda item from the board members? Okay. All right. Then, with your concurrence, we'll move on with the agenda.
Sure.
Number seven is informational only, and I think I noted a perfect attendance record. Yay, us. Announcements are the next meeting, and that one is not likely to be canceled or postponed. No. So February 25th at 2:30 p.m. right here.
I have an announcement.
Please.
So I'd like to point out just for the record that the alternate, the official alternate for this board is Raymond Gregory. We've had a shift. Thank you, Councilman McDiatis, for covering for us initially. We had a shift in our appointments due to the death of Mr. Pettis. And I just want to confirm that Raymond's here. I also note that neither of the other two councilmen participated in this discussion today.
Okay. Thank you so much. Any other announcements?
Didn't even knock. We're doing our appointments on Wednesday, but I think most of ours will stay the same.
Fantastic.
So I assume I'll be here.
We've done our appointments. I beg to have a change. They said, no, you're stuck. I'm your guy. If there's no further business, then this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
I'm on to my fourth part.
I have to be on for a break.
Okay.
Thanks for coming.
At 101.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that.
I guess I'm going to go to calendar.